From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Thursday, January 16th, and here are today's headlines. Former Governor Tom Salmon has passed away at the age of 92. His election in 1972 is considered one of the biggest upsets in Vermont political history. Late that summer, no Democrat had emerged as a gubernatorial candidate, and at the very last minute, Salmon threw his hat into the ring. His political experience? Serving three terms in the Vermont House. And pundits gave him virtually no chance of winning against Republican businessman Luther Hackett. Former AP reporter Chris Graff says Salmon gained a lot of public support by campaigning tirelessly on two issues: the need to control out-of-state land development and a law that allows some Vermonters to pay their school taxes based on their income.
Both of those laws that Tom Salmon championed in 72 and passed in 73 are still on our books today.
After he left office, Salmon also served as the president of UVM and chairman of the board of Green Mountain Power. Senators Bernie Sanders and Peter Welch yesterday welcomed news of a reported ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas. In separate statements, both senators called for the release of hostages and said aid organizations must have clearance to provide food, water, and medical care in the Gaza Strip. They also highlighted the need to rebuild Gaza. And Sanders said there must be accountability for war crimes committed by both sides in the conflict. NPR reports Hamas and Israeli officials still have some details to hash out before finalizing the ceasefire, including a start date. Vermont's lax approach to repeat offenders is fueling property crime in communities across the state. That's according to Republican Governor Phil Scott, who will be introducing legislation that would create clearer legal standards for when a defendant can be held without bail. J. Pershing Johnson serves as Scott's top legal counsel. She says too many courts are releasing defendants back into the community, even after numerous violations of their conditions of release.
If they continue to commit crimes and there are no consequences, they really have no incentive to stop committing crimes.
Democratic lawmakers say they are open to Scott's proposal, but they say Vermont's constitution puts very narrow limits on when an alleged offender can be detained prior to being convicted in a court of law. Quebec's Environment Ministry is warning the public about a raccoon infected with rabies that was found dead in Saint-Armand near the Vermont border. This is the first case of raccoon rabies in Quebec since 2015. The animal was found close to the Quebec border in the town of Highgate, where a case was discovered in early December. Authorities are warning people who live in or frequent these areas to exercise extra caution with animals that could carry rabies. And researchers at Dartmouth are looking at how tiny marine animals called zooplankton could help remove climate-warming carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Earth Sciences professor Mikal Sharma came up with the idea to make the ocean's process for sequestering carbon more efficient by sprinkling clay over the ocean surface. That clay binds to carbon and starts sinking fast, becoming food for hungry zooplankton who swim up to shallower parts of the ocean for daytime meals.
They will investigate it, whether it's good or bad. But I don't know how good their palate is. They just take everything in. And then they move back down. And of course, they are pooping out the stuff that they've ingested.
Their poop, or perhaps we should just say waste, sinks fast as well, trapping carbon deep under the surface. Sharma's team published a paper on their idea last month. They're preparing to do field testing off the coast of Southern California next. And coming up, preparing for how to deal with a pending death is not exactly a happy activity. But discussing and then formulating an advance directive can help you and your loved ones prepare for end-of-life scenarios and relieve a lot of stress. Vermont Public's Nina Keck has details after this. Death is one of the few sure things in life, but few of us talk through how we want our final days to go or who we want to help us through them. Formalizing those things in an advance directive may be easier and more important than you think. Vermont Public's Nina Keck shares some tips on how to get started.
Many of us hope we'll just slip away in our sleep, but Dr. Amy Gennari, an associate professor at the University of Vermont Health Network and interim chief of geriatrics, says typically the body fights dying, and palliative or comfort care needs to be aggressive.
It is very intensive. It is lots of medications sometimes. It is mixing and matching medications. It is getting the right environment. And so that's why the advance directive is really important, because we want to intervene. I mean, especially as geriatricians and palliative care doctors, this is what we do. We try to help people have a good peaceful death.
But data shows 2 out of 3 Americans don't have an advance directive.
The number of families that I see struggling when someone has a sudden illness, especially when it's critical and they're in the intensive care unit on machines, and there's never been a conversation, there's nothing in writing, and they have no idea what to do, the burden of those decisions is huge.
Eva Zivitz is a registered nurse who coordinates the palliative care program at Rutland Regional Medical Center. Part of her job is helping people with advance directives and navigating end-of-life issues. If this is a conversation you've been avoiding, here are some tips on how to get started. First, and this may surprise you, it's not just something older people need to think about. Serious injuries and illness can happen to anyone.
In general, I feel that anybody over the age of 18 should consider at least identifying a person that they would trust to speak for them if something were to happen and they were in a position where they couldn't speak for themselves.
Experts say choosing an advocate is the most important part of this whole process. And Zivitz says it doesn't have to be a family member.
What you're really looking for is someone who knows you well and someone who's willing to advocate for what you yourself want, even if it differs from their own personal beliefs.
Don't assume that whomever you choose will just know what you want. Zivitz says if you ask someone or are asked yourself to be a healthcare agent, sit down together and talk.
When I'm asked, I want to have a conversation with the person first. Let's talk about what your thoughts are. Let me know what's going on with your health and what are you thinking your wishes might be so that then I can feel comfortable knowing I can advocate for you well.
Not sure how to start this conversation? Try this.
I was thinking about what happened to Aunt Jessie, and it made me realize some things.
Even though I'm okay right now, I'm worried that something may come up and I want to be prepared. Can we talk about some things that matter to me?
I need to think about the future. Will you help me?
The conversation is the important thing, however you broach it. Once you've got a healthcare agent and a backup, you can move on to step 2.
The rest of an advance directive, whether you call it a living will or use another type of form with a different name, is just a way of guiding that person, putting something in writing to help the person who's making decisions have something to rely on if they have to make decisions for you.
Every state handles advance directives a bit differently. In Vermont, you don't need a lawyer, a notarized signature, or an official form. You can write your advance directive on the back of a napkin if you want to. Just make sure you include your agent's contact information and sign it in the presence of 2 witnesses who are not family members and not your agent. Once you do that, it's a legal document. Experts say going over the forms with your doctor is a good idea, as they can talk over different medical scenarios that may come up. For instance, Amy Gennari says some of her patients have told her it's important that they die at home. Others have told her that for religious reasons, they don't want any medications, nothing. Others have told her they want everything and to be kept alive at all costs. Gennari says it's all about figuring out what living means to you.
What matters most to me in life? What matters most in terms of, you know, my happiness, my interactions with others? What is it that matters most to me? And where would I draw the line of saying, wow, if I didn't have the ability to do X, then life really wouldn't be worth living and I'd want to be focusing more on just keeping myself comfortable and getting ready for the dying process.
Once you've chosen an agent and filled out your forms, make several copies. Keep the original and give a copy to your agent and one to family or friends included in the process. Your primary care doctor should get a copy and mail a copy to your local hospital so they can upload it into their electronic medical record. You should also register your advance directive with the state. It's a free process, and we have information on how to do that on our website. And don't forget to revisit this issue every 5 years or so, because your wishes and your advocate may change. For Vermont Public, I'm Nina Kack.
The Vermont Ethics Network has an assortment of advance directive forms in 14 different languages that you can download. We have links to them and other helpful information on our website. And tune in today at noon when Vermont Edition will delve deeper into this topic. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Bob Kinzel, Kevin Trevelyan, Peter Hirschfeld, Nathaniel Wilson, and the New England News Collaborative. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelyan, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.
How are we supposed to fix what we don't talk about? Welcome to Homegoings, a Vermont Public podcast that encourages fearless conversations about art and race.
It's like an extended family, and especially around homegoing time.
Join us for Homegoings, wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the NPR network.